Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again to Circles of Change in our final segment on this Saturday afternoon. I'm speaking with Russell Bishop now in an office in Los Angeles International Airport. How are you today, Russell?
Oh, I'm doing just great.
Terrific. And being the international traveler that you are, catching you right before Bangkok, so thanks a lot for giving us some of your time.
Oh, Zara, it's a great pleasure to be on your show.
Excellent. Well, let me give a brief introduction for our listeners. Russell Bishop is a speaker, educator, coach, and consultant whose clients include Fortune 500 executives in aerospace, healthcare, information technology, and telecommunications. He's also founder and managing partner of Bishop & Bishop, which is a firm helping executives and managers increase alignment and improve execution across the organization. A recognized expert in personal and organizational transformation, and educated in educational psychology, Russell brings 35 years of expertise to the implementation of strategy and improving performance, as well as extensive international experience in Europe, Asia, North, and South America. An avid golfer and an amateur chef, Russell also serves as a senior editor at large for the Huffington Post, bringing fresh voices and new perspectives to the business and living sections. And along with his recent book, which is Workarounds That Work, How to Conquer Anything That Stands in Your Way at Work, he is the author of numerous articles on the power of choice and awareness in improving life situations. Well, congratulations on publishing your book. How is it going so far?
Well, I like to say it's everywhere from great to insane. There's lots to do, but it's great fun.
That's excellent. In fact, we often, anyone who's published a book, you know, they think all the work is getting it to print, but you realize it's after it hits the shelves or hits the press circuit, that's really when the work and the fun collides, right?
Yeah, very much. It's about 2% effort to write the book. Oh, yeah, there's a lot to come.
There's lots to come. Russell, you do a wonderful job. I had the pleasure of reading your book on a flight back last night for myself from the East Coast. This blend of both work-related salience as well as how this applies to your personal life. So in that regard, it must have been a fun piece to write.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of a culmination of my whole career. I spent my life helping people answer the question, what is it you think you want and why do you want it? And so it really does bridge both personal and professional. Of course, this book was written from the professional perspective, but it will equally apply to how do you get what you really want in life instead of what you settle for.
Isn't that the truth? Oftentimes when I read books, I'm running around with a highlighter, underlining, and then I start noting special quotations that I picked up in the course of reading it, and two that really hit me back-to-back in one category and one paragraph. You were talking about the necessity of clearing things away, that trees that need to be pruned to stay healthy, or you need to get rid of dead wood to open up room for growth. And I think that's what you're saying, this idea of a workaround is how you overcome the things that trip you up, and not that you're ignoring them, but you're really learning how to effectively deal with them and step beyond.
Oh, absolutely. And no secret to anyone who's got a job out there today, if you're still lucky enough to have one, that the volume of work is just screaming at us with even an increased velocity. So it's pretty much the her little kids say, you mean the hurrier I do, the behinder I get? Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. Well, that word workaround, let's go with that and help us get some definition, because sometimes people could jump to the conclusion of this is a deliberate way to circumvent what I'm being told to do. But really, you're also talking about taking the process to a new place so you don't have to go revisit it the same old way when you come back again.
Absolutely, and there are always those folks who will view the half-empty cup, but what a workaround is best defined if you think about sailing a boat. So you're out at sea and your mast breaks. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can blame the manufacturer, and you might be right, but you're still dead in the water, and you can bemoan your fate, where'd that wind come from? And you're still stuck. So a workaround in the sailing world is called a jerry rig or a jury rig.
Mm-hmm.
It means how do you put a temporary mast up, something that will get you going. It's probably not enough to sail around the world, but it gets you moving. And once you're moving, you can steer. And if you can move and steer, you can get someplace. And that's what a workaround is. how do you get something up that gets you moving when you're stuck?
But I think you're also mindful to say, be careful not to leave that jerry-rig in place forever, because it'll eventually could fall apart or lead to other problems.
Oh, absolutely. And part of the game in the moving away from sailing is that if you're stuck behind a complex system or an antiquated process or a stubborn work group or someone who's just plain being negative, the workaround is not so much about how do you work around them in a negative way, it's how do you work around the resistance
mm-hmm.
so you can get something moving. And then once it's moving, the question is, well, how could you get it moving even better? So you can steer a car that's moving, you just can't steer it when it's stuck on the side of the road. So get it going, and then ask yourself, well, what could I do next that would make it even better?
Now, that's a really good point, because I think a lot of people, when they're stuck in a complex situation or a trying environment, whatever, we might have this tendency to say, I'm stopped, so now I got to figure it all out before I take the first step forward.
Well, I think what's really critical in all this is if you think about building a jigsaw puzzle, it's helpful if you have the picture on the cover. And that's the first workaround in some instances, is getting a good picture of where you're going. And then you can start with any darn piece. Some will be easier to start with than others, so people usually look for corners and edges. That makes sense. But it's not the perfect solution. It's just the piece that gets you moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Russell, the journey to write your book, do you feel you even applied some of this in writing a book on this subject? To get you going, to get you started in this endeavor?
Absolutely. This is a hysterical story. I've been writing columns on the Huffington Post for several years. It turns out the publisher at McGraw-Hill had been following my columns and contacted me in about the end of January of 2010 and said, hey, could you write a fast-track book for me? And by the way, could you get it done in 4 weeks?
Oh, my goodness.
So I said, well, okay, I'm good, but not that good. So I took on a bold move, and I said, let's do it in 6. So I sat down every morning, and there's a blank computer screen, and I just started. I had a little tiny mind map up on a easel pad sheet that had basic themes, and I just started to pull themes out, ask myself, okay, what do I know that's useful in that area from all my years of practice? And so I would start. And, of course, the first start wasn't perfect, but it got the dam unblocked. It got the flow going. And then I could go, oh, that's what I really want to say. So it was really pretty much start it, improve it, look at it, improve it again, and just keep iterating till it wound up as a book.
Well, I would venture to say, though, that perhaps some of these chapters, though, already existed in some fashion already in your head, right? Whether it had been an article that you wrote in the Huffington Post, or as readers would enjoy, the number of stories that you rely upon from your own consulting days, that maybe the lived experience you would have known to call it, oh, this belongs in the chapter of Don't Blame, right? But it was still kind of there in the immediate data bank that you've got.
Very much so. And for those of you listening to this call, I really want to underscore something about this book. This is not management theory.
Correct.
I've worked behind every theory there is, so I don't care if you're trying to go from good to great or searching for excellence or trying to implement Six Sigma or Lean, or it doesn't matter. My expertise isn't what the theory should be. It's what's in the way of execution. So all of the chapters and all of the anecdotes are about real people who came up against a real problem and found a real solution and worked around what was in their way. So it's really about how do you get going when you're stuck? Not what theory should you apply, but what actual action can you take?
And what you often said right here at the onset of the book is, remember, perhaps the first place you start is what's in your own head.
Oh, there's no question. I have been living proof of that my entire life. I had my own set of circumstances growing up. My family went bankrupt twice before I got out of high school. I somehow managed to get into college, and then my dad died of leukemia. The insurance company refused to pay, and we wound up out of homes again, and I was living in a car. Now, I had a lot of things to blame and a lot of complaints that were legitimate, but blaming and complaining, and I'm still stuck in the car with $6 to my name. So that's when I found out early on that the first workaround is, what do I tell myself?
Mm-hmm.
And so for those of you listening, if you don't get anything from what we're talking about today, write this down because this could be life-changing. Here's a great question when you're stuck anywhere in your personal life, your finances, your job, your career. Here's the question. What could you do that would make a difference that requires no one's permission except your own?
Right.
Now, if you ask yourself that question, you're going to come up with some kind of micro step or two. It won't be what I call perfectionally correct, but it may be directionally correct. And if you can find even one answer to a difference you could make, take that step, because as soon as you're moving, you can steer again. And now you're going to start to see even more steps you can take. So an incredibly powerful question to get you going.
Well, I think the also you introduce and use the word responsibility, but not in the context of, oh, this is on my shoulders, but your ability to respond?
Absolutely. There's a four-step process that is so simple that will help you turn around any situation that you're in. And the first one is just get a clear picture of where you're going and what is your intention. Did you want to stay stuck and complain, or did you want to get it moving and fix it? So that's the first one. Then comes accountability, which means, are you willing to own the vision coming true? Are you willing to own the outcome of improvement in the future? So if you got a picture, you're willing to own it, that's where responsibility shows up. And that simply means two words, ability and response. What it is your ability to respond in your current situation? And again, it may not be a perfect response, but does it move you forward a little bit? So assess your choices, assess your capability, make the best choice you can, get going, and then ask yourself, where am I now? What's my next choice? And just keep going, but you need to keep the puzzle picture in your mind, your commitment to it, and just keep making choices along the way.
That's very good. For those of you who may have just tuned in, we're speaking with Russell Bishop, who's the author of a new book called Workarounds That Work, How to Conquer Anything That Stands in Your Way at Work. But the principles obviously equally apply on a deep personal level. Russell, the idea, you introduced this thought of the difference between a choice and a decision. That one had me pondering.
Oh, it's a great one. It's either completely semantical. Semantical is a word, or it's so practical that I'll let you choose, listeners. But if you got a piece of paper, write the word decide down and write it as its two syllables. D-E is the first syllable and C-I-D-E is the second. And then ask yourself, what other words do you know that end in C-I-D-E? And you'll probably come up with a list that mean things like homicide, patricide, fratricide, insecticide, suicide. There's a pattern there. The root word of decide is a Latin word that means to either cut out, as in a vicious cutting out,
right,
or to kill. And most people's decision process is to kill from, and the D-E means from or of, till kill from available choices or kill off choices. There's three things we can do. What's wrong with A? Shoot it down. Ah, okay, what's wrong with B? Shoot it down. What's wrong with C? Either shoot it down and say, see, I told you we couldn't do anything.
That's right.
Or you pick C and just push it because that's the only one left standing. I'm a big fan of saying, yeah, okay, let's redefine decide or decision to simply mean choose. And you simply have to choose two things. Choose the good outcome you're going toward. So what's the picture on the puzzle top? And then choose a next step. Don't need to know all of the steps. Just the next one. If you do know many, that's fine. But the key is knowing where you're going and the next step. Choose. And then when the road forks, if you turned out that you made the wrong choice, there's still another chance to choose.
Right.
So keep moving.
Well, and you know, though, as your book takes us into, is the idea of, okay, let's apply these precepts in a company context or an organizational context. Let's say it's even a nonprofit or the community service teams that our listeners might be involved in. How many times the feeling is, you know, we're not getting the whole full strategy planned out or laid out. This is all about getting everybody bought in before we start. And your advice would say no, that actually progress trumps buy-in, that you actually will, it's the chicken or the egg, right? You'll get them in the way, in the journey.
Well, it's absolutely great. In fact, I was going to title the chapter, and then the editor decided that it was a little too unpolitically correct. consensus constipation.
Oh, dear, yeah.
Now, what I mean by that, and for those of you who are wondering just how practical this stuff is, by the way, I started five companies, including a not-for-profit, that grew from a spare bedroom to 34 countries around the world. And trust me, I did not have a strategic plan. It was a constant set of choices, and follow what's showing up and keep working with it iteratively. And there were a lot of naysayers along the way. Oh, that'll never work. And I wasted a lot of time early on trying to get everybody to buy in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out something, and think about your own organization. You probably got two kinds of critics in your organization. You've got the critics who care, and their criticism is because they care, and they're trying to look for a perfect solution, something that's risk-free. Even if you pay attention to those folks, you still may get stuck because they'll have another one and another one.
They always will. They'll always come around the corner with another yeah, but.
Exactly, and the yeah, buts do multiply, don't they?
Oh, they do. They do.
Now, there's a second kind of critic, which is much more toxic, and that's the one who doesn't want anything to succeed because they don't want anything to change.
Change, exactly.
And that one, you'll never get them on board. So if you try to gain buy-in before you get going, you may be stymied for years. So what I found worked was find the people who are on board, who've got the vision and have got the commitment, and get going. So the theme always is get going. But here's something magical. As soon as it starts to work, that positive critic, which is sort of oxymoronic, but they are positive, they go, oh, this works. And they're going to jump on board because they want to be involved in the success. And that's why they criticized in the first place. And the one who just wanted to stop everything, well, they're just going to get isolated. And I've seen many, many times when that kind of toxic critic is isolated because it's working, they wind up quitting. You don't have to fire them. They quit.
Absolutely. They'll get out of your way. That's
true.
There's
no choir for them to preach to anymore.
One of the interesting ways I think people enjoy your book, Russell, again, the book is Workarounds That Work, is to think about allowing innovation and creativity to take you in a different place. Particularly, you know, it's one of those things that if you've got a process-laden organization, you're almost darned if you do and darned if you don't. On one hand, the process allows you to get scale in what you do, but at some point you get to this tipping point where it starts choking off the ability to do what you do. Relate that story again of the creative artist who jumped the whole record music releasing process and put something up on YouTube.
Absolutely. Evan Taubenfeld is his name. He's a country rock star who did a lot of backup work for other big-name performers. He got a contract with Warner, and he started producing some music. Christmas of 2009... he sort of had the infatuation, if you will, with Taylor Swift, and he decided to write her a Christmas joke song, and he did it in a day, and it was called Taylor Swiftness, All I Want for Christmas is Taylor Swift. So kind of cute. And he just threw it up on YouTube for laughs. Well, about 500,000 people downloaded his little joke. Taylor herself saw it and tweeted him a blushing thank you note, and so all this within 24 to 36 hours. So Evan gets on the phone with his Warner team, and he says, hey, guys, look at this. We should put this up on iTunes right away. This was December 7th, by the way.
December 7th, okay.
So the marketing team says, well, we have to study this to see what kind of interest there might be in it. And Evan said, excuse me, 500,000 people downloaded it off YouTube. Well, yes, but that doesn't mean they'll buy it. And so they decided they're going to have to study the study of the study of the study. And Evan got frustrated, and they finally came back and said, you know what, well, we'll release this, but December 28th. And Evan went, wait a minute, which part of Christmas didn't you understand? So on something like December 12th, I can't forget the exact date, he just said to heck with it, and he released it to iTunes. And it rocketed to the top of the Country Hot 100 list. It outsold all of his other songs combined. And Warner went, oh, well, I guess that worked.
Right.
The epilogue to that story is he came up with another cool song about 2 months later. They wanted to study it to death. He said to heck with it. He released it to the radio stations, and it did the same thing. And then one more time, and he just gave up, and he resigned his contract.
Contract, right.
So guess what happened just this past November? The entire marketing team was fired.
Yeah, and when you see that opportunity right in front of you, but, you know, it's like you said in your book, though, the fish can't see the water they swim in.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so how we work around that. One other fun chapter that you've mentioned to, and I have a sense it might have been even written in some frustrating moments of your own, this whole misnomer of multitasking. You call it half-tasking. Or then swimming through the sea, the morass of email that is always trying to choke us off. Share some wisdom and thoughts on that.
Well, we're not going to solve the email problem unless you replace it with your texting problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah, which one? Pick your poison.
It's going to come flying at you. And pretty much like that process that Warner had come up with, I'm sure it was designed originally because it made sense. But times had changed, and with instant feedback through places like the Internet and clubs, you don't need that process. So a lot of email is driven to us because at some point that communication seemed to make sense. So here's what I suggest. First of all, when something shows up in your inbox, and I've looked at inboxes, by the way, people, with folks who have 20, 30, 40,000 emails in there, and we're able to get them down to zero and have them get back to zero once or twice a week. So it is doable. It's real simple. Open the email and always have stenciled on the back of your eyelids the question, what is this? So many people do not tell you what it is, and the subject line can be as misleading as crazy. So, especially when you get the RE stuff. So, what is it? And then immediately ask yourself, what action is required? And then, that's enough for most people. But if you really want to get out from under the overwhelm, you ask yourself one third question. That third question is, what value shows up if I take that action? Now, how do you know it's valuable? Well, map it back to your goals and to your purpose and to your mission. And if it moves that forward, do it. If it doesn't, delete it, or at least put it over on the someday maybe list to think about later.
Because your caution to everybody is this idea that we can indeed multitask. Oh. Really what you're doing is you're half-tasking and not providing focus to do anything well, most likely.
And so for those readers who think you're power taskers, you can Google multitasking and Huffington Post, and you'll come up with a nice article about the neuroscience behind how even the power multitaskers, as they begin to put more than two things in front of them at once, you know, chew gum, walk, yeah, you can do that. Try to do three things, and the brain actually slows down its processing time. And it actually takes longer the more tasks you're trying to do multiply. Now, users or listeners, you'll know this. Do you ever start the day and you pick up a piece of paper that's stuck on your desk and you start to get into it, and all of a sudden you go, oh, God, I was supposed to call Fred yesterday. So you call Fred. Fred's busy. Can you hold? Okay, fine. Then you notice the sticky note you put on the computer. You look at that. And, oh, geez, now you open up another email. Pretty soon you got five things going, and the phone comes on and says, hello.
And you
ever
say,
go, hello, who?
Hello, who? Who did I just call?
So you go through the day like that, bouncing, because your brain is remembering all this stuff kind of randomly. And then you get to the end of the day, and that one piece of paper you started with is still there. So there's a big difference between having focus and getting things done and trying to multitask and wind up half-tasking.
That's
you can't
right.
have multiple goals, but you can't work on them all at once.
The idea, let's again go back to this term workarounds, that still requires, yep, we're going to get ingenious and work around a given set of circumstance. Let's just look, you and me here today, we thought that we weren't going to miss your opportunity to come here live because of when your flights were. And so we were able to move some things around and make it happen. But it always still makes you want to step back and say, how could I have prevented this? Or is there a way, even part of the time, that I can change the process, right? I mean, so you're not telling people to abdicate, still going back and seeing how you could do it different so it wouldn't show up again, but to be in the moment, recognize you're still a lived condition.
You have to be right now, because the only time for anything to be done is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday you can worry about, did you make the right choice? And tomorrow you can worry about, if you will, but now's when you choose. So I like to have people think about start, stop, continue. Because one of the things you're going to find in life is that it keeps changing no matter how much you plan. So if it's a change in a customer, change in the job, change in how a work team is going on, if the economy craters, you know, just all the things that happen. If you do have a good list of all the things you should be choosing from, all the projects, goals, and tasks, ask yourself, based on what just changed, is there anything here I should stop doing because it no longer matters? Is there anything I need to start doing because it's new? And is there anything I have to continue because that goal or that process still matters? But keep it fresh by start, stop, continue. And I do that every Friday in what I call my weekly review. Now, for those of you who are David Allen fans, you're hearing a lot of familiar language here. It's because David and I worked together for 20-plus years. And so his book, Getting Things Done, will take you into detail of this. My book, I give you some detail on a couple pieces.
And I think the other side of it is we put so much energy in wanting to start new things, but do we take enough time to say, okay, what are we going to stop so we can be effective in what we start? In fact, I jokingly call it the focus on going live with the new system, that sometimes where the real energy and cautiousness needs to be is what you cause to go dead and really how you retire that system to go forward. Thank you so much, Russell, for joining us about his new book, Workarounds That Work, How to Conquer Anything That Stands in Your Way. It's a real pleasure to have had you here. In fact, people can learn more about the book by going to workaroundsthatwork.com and also russellbishop.com to learn the type of coaching and consulting work you do. Russell, have a very safe trip over to the other side of the world and look forward to keeping track of the progress you make here with your book.
Absolutely, and if your readers do go to russellbishop.com, that's two S's and two L's, there's a free chapter of the book there for you.
Absolutely. Take care then. Have a great trip. We'll be in touch soon.
Thank you, Dr. Z. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you today.
You bet. We'll be in touch. Thank you, Russell.
Thank you.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.